This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. The first story this week comes from Theatre Royal. We'll hear Mr. Micawber's Difficulties from March 13th, 1954. After that, it's Box 13 and One of These Four from May 8th, 1949.
The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribed, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Today, for a change, our play is to be taken from sequences I've chosen from a novel which I think must be almost the most famous ever written. Charles Dickens, David Copperfield. This particular sequence introduces a particular character. To me, a very particular character, Mr. Micawber. So now I'm going to tell you the story of Mr. Micawber's difficulties. My name is David Copperfield, and this is to be the story of an early chapter in my life, the story of my boyhood. It is a deplorable, but no unusual thing for a boy to be out of favor with his stepfather, and since he stood in that relation to me, perhaps I can charge no unusual harshness against Mr. Murdstone in that he wished me out of his sight. As his stepson, I was an expense and a burden to him, and Mr. Murdstone could see no reason why that expense should be prolonged. Which was the reason, no doubt, why he launched me so early upon my working career.
I suppose you know, David, that I'm not rich. At any rate, you know it now. You've received some considerable education already. Education is costly. And even if it were not and I could afford it, I'm of opinion it would not be to your advantage to stay on at school.
Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir.
What is before you is a fight with the world. And the sooner you begin it, the better.
Yes, sir.
You've heard the counting house mentioned sometimes.
Counting house?
Our business, Murdstone and Grinby and the wine trade.
Yes, sir, I think so.
Well, you've heard the counting house mentioned, or the business, or the cellars, or the wharf, or something about it.
Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Quinlan here manages the business. He suggests that it gives employment to other boys, and he sees no reason why it shouldn't on the same terms give employment to you.
He having no other prospect, Murdstone.
Precisely. Those terms are, David, that you earn enough for yourself to provide for your eating and drinking and pocket money. Your lodging, which I have arranged for, will be paid by me.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
So you are now going to London, David, with Mr. Quinlan here, to begin the world on your own account. In short, you are provided for and will please to do your duty. You will leave on the coach tomorrow morning.
I know enough of the world now to have almost lost the capacity of being surprised by anything. But it is a matter of some surprise to me, even now, that I can have been so easily thrown away at such an age. A child of excellent abilities and with strong powers of observation, quick, eager, delicate, and soon hurt bodily and mentally. It seems wonderful to me that nobody should have made any sign in my behalf. But none was made, and I became, at 10 years old, a little laboring hind in the service of Murdstone and Grimby. Their warehouse was on the London riverside, down in Blackfriars. It was a crazy old house with a wharf of its own, abutting on the water when the tide was in, and on the mud when the tide was out, and literally overrun with rats.
You don't want to take any notice of the rats. They won't bother you if you don't bother them.
No, I won't.
My name's Mick, Mick Walker, and that there's my dad. He's a bargeman. And this is Mealy.
Mealy?
Yes, I'm Mealy Potatoes, they call me. My dad's a farmer. What's your dad?
Well, I don't really have a dad. My stepfather's Mr. Murdstone.
What, him? The governor? Not that we see much of him round here, of course. Oh, are you one of the knobs, then?
Nah, he's just a bottle washer like you and me. Come on, then. Let's get started on some of these.
What do I have to do, please?
You've got to watch out for flaws in them and wash them as hasn't got them. Then you've got to stick labels on them when they're filled and cork them in the cask here. So let's get started on them.
No words can express the secret agony of my soul as I sunk into my new companionship, or the shame I felt in my new position. As often as Mick Walker went away in the course of that afternoon, I mingled my tears with the water in which I was washing the bottles, and sobbed as if there were a flaw in my own breast, and it was in danger of bursting. It was dinner time before anyone spoke to me again.
Hey, he wants you. Mr. Quinion in the counting house. He said to tell you.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I went into the counting house where Mr. Quinion was waiting for me, and found there a stoutish, middle-aged person in a brown surtout and black tights and shoes, with no more hair upon his head, which was a large one and very shining, than there is upon an egg, and with a very extensive face, which he turned full upon me. His clothes were shabby, but he had an imposing shirt collar on. He carried a jaunty sort of stick, with a large pair of rusty tassels to it, and a quizzing glass hung outside his coat.
Ah. Well, this is he. So this is Master Copperfield. I hope I see you well, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I hope you're the same, sir.
I am, thank heaven, very well. I've received a letter from Mr. Murdstone in which he mentions that he would desire me to receive into an apartment in the rear of my house, which is at present unoccupied, and is, in short, to be let as a, in short, as a bedroom. The young beginner whom I now have the pleasure to...
This is Mr. Micawber.
That is my name.
Mr. Micawber is known to Mr. Murdstone. He takes orders for us on commission, when he can get any. He's been written to by Mr. Murdstone on the subject of your lodgings, and he'll receive you as a lodger.
My address is Windsor Terrace, City Road. In short, I live there.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Under the impression that your peregrinations in this metropolis have not yet been extensive, and that you might find some difficulty in penetrating the arcana of the modern Babylon in the direction of the City Road, in short, that you might lose yourself, I shall be happy to call this evening and install you in the knowledge of the nearest way.
It's very kind of you, sir.
At what hour?
At about eight.
At about eight. I beg to wish you good day, Mr. Quinion. I will intrude no longer.
My salary at Murdstone and Grimby's was 6 shillings a week. Mr. Quinion had paid me a week down, from his own pocket, I believe, and I gave Mealy 6 pence out of it to get my trunk carried to Windsor Terrace that night, it being too heavy for my strength, small as I was. I paid 6 pence more for dinner, which was a meat pie and a turn at the neighbouring pump. At the appointed hour, Mr. Micawber called to conduct me to his home, a house in Windsor Terrace that was shabby like himself, but also, like himself, made all the show it could. And there I was duly presented to Mrs. Micawber.
And this, my dear, is Master Copperfield, whom we have undertaken to install in the top floor back in the capacity of, in short, as our lodger.
We are happy to have you among us, Master Copperfield. Though I never thought before I was married, when I lived with Papa and Mama, that I should ever find it necessary to take a lodger. But Mr. Micawber being in difficulties, all considerations of private feelings give way.
Yes, ma'am.
The difficulties, I trust, are of a merely temporary nature. Almost any time now, I'm expecting something to turn up.
This is Master Wilkins Micawber, aged 4. This is Miss Emma, aged 3. These are the twins, as yet unweaned. And this is the help, Cricket.
I'm an orphling from St. Luke's.
Pleased to meet you. My name's David, David Copperfield.
Well, Copperfield, Mrs. Micawber will show you to your room while I assist at the preparation of a convivial ball. In short, an egg flip with our kippers.
Thank you, sir.
This way, Master Copperfield. Mr. Micawber's difficulties are almost overwhelming at present. Whether it is possible to bring him through them, I don't know. When I lived at home with Papa and Mama, I really should have hardly understood what the word meant in the sense in which I now employ it. But experience sure does it, as Papa used to say.
I'm very sorry, ma'am. I hope things will turn out for him.
Of course. If Mr. Micawber's creditors will not give him time, they must take the consequences. And the sooner they bring it to the issue, the better. Blood cannot be obtained from a stone. Neither can anything on account be obtained at present, not to mention the long expenses, from Mr. Micawber. Well, Master Copperfield, this is your room. I trust you will be comfortable.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much.
My room was at the top of the house, at the back. A close chamber, scantily furnished, and stenciled all over with an ornament which my young imagination represented as a blue muffin. In that room, or with the family, I passed my leisure time for the next few weeks. My own exclusive breakfast of a penny loaf and a pennyworth of milk I provided myself. I kept another small loaf and a modicum of cheese on a particular shelf of a particular cupboard to make my supper on when I came back at night. Otherwise, I was out at the warehouse all day and had to support myself on my 6 shillings all the week. Meanwhile, Mr. Micawber's difficulties showed no sign of abating.
Come on! You ain't heard you, can I, Mr. Micawber? Pay us, will you? Damn tight, you know, that's me. I wouldn't be mean if I was you. Here, pay us, will you? Just pay a cheer. Come on, we ain't got no time for swindlers and robbers, not us.
Dear, I do wish they wouldn't be so importunate. You can scarcely imagine the grief and mortification I feel, Copperfield, that you should find my affairs in such an unhappy state.
I think he's gone now, Mr. Micawber.
We shall see. After all, it is only time that I require of them, and all shall be put to rights. It just so happens I have every expectation of something turning up, in which case I shall meet every man's expectation, and, in short, I shall pay them.
Little did I think, Master Copperfield, when I was living with my...
I was making a little calculation the other night as to the expense of putting bow windows to the house. I cannot have a feeling that it would be a great improvement.
Well, no doubt it would, Micawber, but this is hardly the time for it.
Perhaps you're right, my dear. I was merely thinking of it in case anything turns up. As the coast now appears to be clear, I will take the opportunity of going about my business, I think. Goodbye, my dear. Good day to you, Copperfield.
Good day, sir. Master Copperfield, I make no stranger of you, and therefore do not hesitate to say that Mr. Micawber's difficulties are coming to a crisis.
I'm very sorry, ma'am.
With the exception of a heel of a Dutch cheese, which is not adapted to the wants of a young family, there's really not a scrap of anything in the larder.
Oh, dear. I've 2 shillings of my money left, ma'am. If you would only...
No, my dear Master Copperfield, far be it from my thoughts. But you have a discretion beyond your years and can render me another kind of service if you will.
Of course, Mrs. Micawber. Anything.
I've parted with the plate myself. 6 tea, 2 salt, and a pair of sugars I borrowed money on with my own hands. But the twins are a great tie. And to me, with my recollections of Papa and Mama, these transactions are very painful. There are still a few trifles we could part with, though Mr. Micawber's feelings would never allow him to dispose of them. Master Copperfield, if I might ask you...
Why, of course, ma'am. I pass the pawnbroker's on my way to work.
At the pawnbroker's shop, I soon began to be very well known. But Mr. Micawber's difficulties were such that no pawnbroker could take care of them for long. And at last, those difficulties came indeed to a crisis.
Micawber, is anything wrong? Who are these persons?
No, my dear, I regret to announce that the blow has fallen. I am to regard myself as temporarily in the embarrassment of a restraint, and am, in short, I'm under arrest.
Under arrest?
Yes, painful as it must be to you, my dear, I am to be carried over to the King's Bench prison in the borough for debt. The god of day has gone down upon me. In short, my heart is broken.
Now,
this is a short of an outrage. If my poor papa and mamma
Yes, my dear, we must bear these things as best we may. I have no doubt at all that the restraint would be of a purely temporary nature.
I told these gentlemen
that I am hourly expecting something to turn up.
Let's come to this.
My dear, we must bear our troubles philosophically. As for you, Copperfield, I must solemnly advise you to take warning by my face. I invite you to consider one thing. If a man has an income of £20 and spends £19, 19 shillings and sixpence, he will be happy. If he has an income of £20 and spends £20, aught and sixpence, he will be miserable.
Nothing, Copperfield, nothing.
And now, gentlemen, I am at your disposal. To the King's Bench prison!
Now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
On the first Sunday after Mr. Micawber was taken to the King's Bench prison, I went to have dinner there with him. Mr. Micawber was waiting for me within the gate, and we went up to his room, top story but one, and there we cried together. He again begged me to take warning from his example, after which he borrowed a shilling from me for porter, gave me a written order on Mrs. Micawber for the amount, and put away his pocket handkerchief and cheered up. We sat before a little fire with 2 bricks put within the rusted gate, one on each side, to prevent its burning too many coals. Then another debtor, who shared the room with him, came in from the bakehouse with a loin of mutton, and we all set to.
I hope you remembered to give Captain Hopkins my compliments, Copperfield, for the loan of his knife and fork.
Oh, yes, sir. He sent his compliments to you along with...
Very civil of him, I'm sure. And how are things progressing in Windsor Terrace? Mrs. Micawber is bearing up well, you say?
Very well, sir. Some of the furniture has been sold up, but we still have enough for our needs.
I am sorry to hear about the furniture, Copperfield. Still, no doubt Mrs. Micawber knows what is best in the circumstances.
Yes, sir.
May I persuade you to a little more mutton, Copperfield? Perhaps a glass of porter would not come amiss.
Thank you, sir.
After all, we must keep in good heart. I'm prepared to meet the demands of my creditors in any way which can be confounded, and hope to be beforehand with the world again before too long.
There was something agreeable and gypsy-like in the dinner after all.
I took back Captain Hopkins' knife and fork early in the afternoon and went home to comfort Mrs. McCorver with an account of my visit. She fainted when she saw me return and made a little jug of egg hot afterwards to console us while we talked it over.
You can have no idea, Master Copperfield, how all this distresses me.
I can imagine, ma'am.
Now that most of the furniture has been carried away, there really seems no point in our staying on in this house any longer. I'm seriously thinking of joining Mr. McCorver myself.
Yes, ma'am, but what...
If you will be so good as to return the key to the landlord, I can have the beds moved over to the King's Bench. And much as I dislike such a course, there seems to be no alternative.
But what about me, ma'am?
Oh, my dear Master Copperfield, I have no intention of leaving you unprovided for. I can hire you a room in the neighborhood, one for you and another for Cricket.
Thank you, ma'am, I'm sure. If it weren't for me being an orphan...
At all costs, we must contrive to keep together, Master Copperfield, for we have come to regard you as very much one of the family.
I hope Mr. McCorber's difficulties can be overcome, ma'am.
Of that I have no doubt, Master Copperfield. The crisis in our affairs will pass.
And so, moving into an even smaller garret, which commanded a pleasant prospect of a timber yard, I continued my daily round at the warehouse. The only changes that I can now remember are that I grew gradually more shabby and lonely, and that the weight of Mr. and Mrs. McCorber's affairs began to press on me more lightly. Some relatives and friends had engaged to help them at their part, and they rarely lived more comfortably in the prison than they had lived for a long time while out of it. I still used to breakfast with them, by virtue of some arrangement that had forgotten me. I also spent each evening with them, walking up and down the parade with Mr. McCorber, or playing casino with Mrs. McCorber, and hearing reminiscences of her papa and mama. Whether they knew where I was at Murdstone and Grimby's, I'm unable to say. At least I never told them.
You will rejoice to hear, Copperfield, that my affairs have at last passed their crisis. The deed of which I've told you has ceased to be a rock ahead of us. In short, I can see my way.
You mean you're going to be released, Mr. McCorver?
My family has decided that Mr. McCorver should apply for his release under the Insolvent Debtors Act. We expect him to be set free in a few weeks' time.
Then I have no doubt I shall, please heaven, begin to be beforehand with the world and to live in a perfectly new manner. If anything turns up.
But what has happened? When did you hear, Mr. McCorver?
I still not heard officially, you understand. I have composed a petition to the House of Commons, praying for an alteration in the law of imprisonment for debt. We have here in the prison a club, Copperfield, in which, as a gentleman, I may claim to have some authority. I have expressed my views of the petition to our fellow members, who have strongly approved of the same, and, in short, they're all going to sign it. Captain Hopkins here has the draft.
Indeed. I make so bold as to read it to Master Copperfield, sir. It's a noble document. To the people's representatives in Parliament assembled. We, the petitioners, His Majesty's unfortunate subjects, humbly approach your Honourable House in the belief that the best interests of His Majesty's realm can the more effectively be served by reconsideration of the laws by which we are...
In due time, Mr. McCorber's petition was ripe for hearing, and to our great joy, he was ordered to be discharged under the Insolvent Debtors Act. His creditors had not proved implacable, and Mrs. McCorber informed me that even the most revengeful of them, a bootmaker, had declared in open court that he bore Mr. McCorber no malice, but that when money was owing to him, he liked to be paid. He said he thought it was only human nature. Mr. McCorber returned to the King's Bench when his case had been heard, as some fees were to be settled, and some formalities observed before he could actually be released. The club received him with transport and held an harmonic meeting that evening at his office. While Mr. McCorber's release was being celebrated, Mrs. McCorber and I retired for some lamb's fry in private, surrounded by her sleeping family.
On such an occasion, I will give you, Master Copperfield, in a little more flip, the memory of my papa and mama.
Are they dead, ma'am?
My mama departed this life before Mr. McCorber's difficulties commenced, or at least before they became pressing. My papa lived to bail Mr. McCorber several times and then expired, regretted by a numerous circle.
I'm sorry, ma'am. But what are you and Mr. McCorber going to do now that he's out of his difficulties?
My family are of opinion that Mr. McCorber should quit London and exert his talents in the country. Mr. McCorber is a man of great talent, Master Copperfield.
I'm sure of that, ma'am.
Of great talent. My family are of opinion that, with a little interest, something might be done for a man of his ability in the custom house. The influence of my family being local, it is their wish that Mr. McCorber should go down to Plymouth. They think it is indispensable that he should be upon the spot.
That he may be ready?
Exactly. That he may be ready in the case of anything turning up.
Are you going too, ma'am?
I never will desert Mr. McCorber, Master Copperfield. Mr. McCorber may have concealed his difficulties from me in the first instance, but his sanguine temper may have led him to expect that he would overcome them. The pearl necklace and bracelets which I inherited from Mama have been disposed of for less than half their value, and the set of coral which was the wedding gift of my papa has been actually thrown away for nothing. But I will never desert Mr. Micawber. No, I never will do it. It's no use asking me.
But, ma'am, I'm not asking you to desert him.
Mr. Micawber has his faults. I don't deny that he's improvident. I don't deny that he has kept me in the dark as to his resources and his liabilities both. But I never will desert Mr. Micawber.
Emma, my angel, whatever is the matter?
I never will desert you,
my life, I'm perfectly aware of it. Pray calm yourself.
He's the parent of my children. He's the father of my twins. He's the husband of my affection. And I never will desert Mr. Micawber.
Mr. Micawber was so deeply affected by this proof of her devotion that he hung over her in a passionate manner, imploring her to look up and be calm. Finally, he begged me to do him the favor of taking a chair on the staircase while he got her to bed. I would have taken my leave for the night, but that he would not hear of my doing that until the stranger's bell should ring. So I sat at the staircase window until he came out and joined me.
How is Mrs. Micawber now, sir?
Very low, Copperfield, I'm afraid. Very low. Reaction. Ah, this has been a dreadful day. We stand alone now. Everything is gone from us.
But I thought you'd both be so happy about your release, Mr. Micawber.
Ah, yes, my release. God bless you, Copperfield. God bless you.
Mr. and Mrs. Micawber were so used to their old difficulties, I think, that they felt quite shipwrecked when they came to consider that at last they were released from them. But through all the confusion and lowness of spirits in which we had suddenly become involved, I plainly saw that Mr. and Mrs. Micawber and their family were going away from London and that a parting between us was near at hand. The next day, they took a lodging in the house where I lived. At the end of the week, they had made arrangements for setting out to Plymouth.
I shall never, Master Copperfield, revert to the period of Mr. Micawber's difficulties without thinking of you. Your conduct has always been of the most delicate and obliging description. You have never been a lodger. You have been a friend.
My dear, Copperfield has a heart to feel for the distresses of his fellow creatures when they are behind a cloud, and a head to plan, and a hand to, in short, a general ability to dispose of such available property as could be made away with.
I'm very sorry you're going away, sir. Truly I am.
My dear young friend, I'm older than you. A man of some experience in life, and of some experience, in short, in difficulties, generally speaking. At present, and until something turns up, which I am, I may say, hourly expecting, I have nothing to bestow but advice. Still, my advice is so far worth taking that, in short, that I've never taken it myself, and am the miserable wretch you behold.
Oh, my dear, Mr.
I say, the miserable wretch you behold. My advice is, never do tomorrow what you can do today. Procrastination is the thief of time. Collar him.
My poor papa's maxim.
My dear, your papa was very well in his way, and heaven forbid that I should disparage him. Take him for all in all. We now shall see, in short, make the acquaintance probably of anybody possessing at his time of life the same legs for gaiters, and able to read the same description of print without spectacles. But he applied that maxim to our marriage, my dear. And that was so far prematurely entered into in consequence that I never recovered the expense. Not that I'm sorry for it. Quite the contrary, my love.
I have never regretted the day, Micawber, no matter what your difficulties may have been.
My other piece of advice, Copperfield, you know. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £19. 19 and sixpence. Result, happiness. Annual income, £20. Annual expenditure, £20. Aught and sixpence. Result, misery. The blossom is blighted, the leaf is withered. The god of day goes down upon the dreary scene, and, in short, you're forever flawed, as I am. Your health, Copperfield.
I'll remember all you've told me, Mr. Micawber. Truly, I will.
Next morning, I met the whole family at the coach office, and saw them with a desolate heart take their places outside the coach at the back.
Master Copperfield, God bless you. I never can forget all that, you know. And I never would if I could.
Thank you, ma'am. I shall never forget you either.
Copperfield, farewell. Every happiness and prosperity. If in the course of revolving years I could persuade myself that my blighted destiny had been a warning to you, I should feel that I had not occupied another man's place in existence all in vain. In case of anything turning up, of which I'm rather confident, I shall be extremely pleased if it should be in my power to advance your prospects.
Thank you, sir. You've been very kind to me.
I think, as Mrs. Micawber sat at the back of the coach with the children, and I stood in the road looking wistfully at them, a mist cleared from her eyes, and she saw what a little creature I really was. I think so, because she beckoned me to climb up with quite a new and motherly expression in her face, and put her arm round my neck, and gave me just such a kiss as she might have given to her own boy. I had barely time to get down again before the coach started. I could hardly see the family for the handkerchiefs they waved. It was gone in a minute.
God bless you, Master Copperfield.
It was gone in a minute. The Orfling and I stood looking vacantly at each other in the middle of the road, and then shook hands and said goodbye. And David Copperfield was on his own at last. This is Laurence Olivier again. This week, in our play, taken from sequences chosen from Charles Dickens' David Copperfield, our cast included Susan Richards as Mrs. Micawber, Patricia Fryer as the young David Copperfield, together with Anthony Green, Gabriel Blunt, Keith Pyatt, and Jackson Fraser. I look forward to the pleasure of your company next week, when I shall introduce another play. Until then, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation, produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
William. William.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mallory?
We're ready to leave at a moment's notice, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Please put this in the mail for me.
Very well, sir.
Oh, you'd better take it ashore and post it there. I'm rather anxious to see who this Box 13 is.
The letter I received was short and to the point. Enclosed with it was a plane ticket and another ticket. First class on the biggest luxury liner afloat. And the letter read, "Be at the end of Pier 9 tomorrow night at 8. Please be prompt." That was all. A command, not a request. When I received it, I wondered who'd written it. Well, I found out. And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, One of These Four.
But, Mr. Holliday, do you want to go on another trip?
Oh, not if I can help it, Susie. But someone paid for these tickets. First class on the biggest liner afloat.
And no name or address. You can't send it back.
But I can bring it back.
You mean you're going to Pier 9 tonight?
Like it says here, Susie, I'm going to Pier 9 tonight. I got to Pier 9 promptly at 8 o'clock. There was no liner there. There was nothing but a cold fog that penetrated to my skin and made me shiver in the dim, hazy light from a half-hearted street lamp a block away. I looked at my watch. It was exactly 8.
Are you Mr. Holliday?
Yes, I'm Dan Holliday.
Do you have the letter that was sent to you?
Huh? Who are you?
My name is William, sir. I'm a steward.
Steward? On what ship?
If you'll be so good as to show me the letter, Mr. Holliday, we can talk later, if you please.
Okay. Here you are.
Very good, sir. If you'll come with me.
Where?
There's a boat waiting, sir, to take you out to the yacht.
Yacht? What yacht? Look, what about this ticket?
That will be explained later, Mr. Holliday. Now, will you come with me, sir?
He stood there waiting for me to follow him. I wondered whether to or not. Well, I'd advertised for adventures, and who blames whom in a case like this? Then...
You coming, sir?
I think you've talked me into it. Okay, William, lead the way. Ten minutes later, I was aboard a yacht. But what a yacht. It was seagoing, and from what I could see in the bad light, ready to go anywhere and do anything. William led the way along the deck.
You go down this companionway, Mr. Holliday.
And it's nice to know we're going somewhere.
Your cabin, Mr. Holliday.
Mine?
Yes, sir. I think you'll find everything in order. Pajamas, toothbrush, everything that you'll need for the night.
Oh, now, wait a minute. If
you're hungry, sandwiches and coffee. Good night, sir.
Hey, now, just a minute, you. Hey, open up. Come on, open this door. William? William? And that, as they say, was that. I was locked in. I thought of breaking in the door, but one good look put that idea out of my head. The door was iron. There was one porthole in the cabin. I couldn't have crawled through it if I'd been dehydrated. Well, I sat down to figure this out. Then it was figured out for me. The yacht was moving. I ran to the porthole. The lights of the city had already been swallowed up by the darkness. Mr. Dan Holliday was going on a trip. But where? And why?
Mr. Holliday. Mr.
Surprise, funny man. I always hide behind doors that people lock on me. Now talk.
My arm, sir. It breaks easily.
I'm glad to hear that. Now come on, talk.
This will do you no good, Mr. Holliday. We've been underway all night.
Maybe you're right.
Oh, thank you, sir. I hope you slept well.
Oh, sure. Now, what's all this about?
Breakfast is being served in the main dining salon, sir.
I get great answers to my questions.
You'll soon find out, sir. Now, if you please.
Go ahead, I'll follow.
As you wish, sir. Down this way, Mr. Holliday.
I followed him down the passage, then into the dining salon. And there, seated around a table, were two men and a woman. They looked up as I entered, and one of the men spoke.
Look here. Just what's the big idea?
You talking to me?
I certainly am.
If I may have a word.
Go ahead.
All four of you are in the same position.
You mean each of us was kidnapped?
No, sir. Invited.
Invited? My foot. I was locked up in the cabin.
So was I.
And me too.
Well, well, well. And when do we learn why, William?
As soon as Mr. Mallory wishes to tell you, sir. Now, breakfast is served. I shall lock the salon door.
Well, I'll be...
I wonder what the gag is.
Oh, if it is a gag.
We may as well get acquainted. My name is Holliday, Dan Holliday.
I'm Stanley Waring.
How do you do?
I'm Philip Clayton.
Hello.
My name's Lansing, Catherine Lansing.
Well, so we know as much as we did before.
We gotta get out of here. Obviously, this is some sort of insane joke.
I wonder if it is, Waring.
Well, what person in his right mind would kidnap four people like this? What do you say, Clayton?
Well, I don't know. Well, take a look out the porthole. We're obviously far at sea. How well can you swim?
Well, maybe we could get to one of the lifeboats.
I don't think so.
Well, why not?
Something tells me the rest of the crew are like William, the steward. I don't think we'd be able to get to a boat even if we got out of this salon.
I guess you're right, Holliday. Well, what do we do?
Mr. Waring, I suggest we have breakfast. I think better on a full stomach. One hour later, William came and unlocked the salon door and took us back to our cabins. I caught sight of some of the crew. They paid no attention to us, but went on with their work. Lunch was the same, locked in the salon, then back to the cabins. But at dinner time...
Good evening, Mr. Holliday.
Hello, William.
I see the dinner jacket fits you, sir.
Very thoughtful of someone to provide the correct size.
Dinner is being served, sir.
Thank you. And will we be honored by Mr. Mallory's presence this evening?
I can't say, Mr. Holliday. Perhaps.
Say, William, where are we?
I'm not a navigator, sir. I have no idea.
There's still an ocean under us, isn't there?
When I last looked, it was there, sir.
Well, lead on, William.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, good evening, Holliday.
Hello, Waring. Miss Lansing.
Oh, good evening. Say, look, we've got to do something about this. We've got to.
What do you suggest, Clayton?
Well, I don't know, but we've got to think.
What are they going to do with us? Why did they bring us here?
Dinner is served.
I'll choke it out of you.
Let him go, Clayton. Come on, let him go. Let him go.
Choke something out of
him. Let him out.
What good will that do you, Mr. Clayton?
Mr. Mallory, sir.
That will be all, William. You may go. And turn that thing off, will you?
Very good, sir.
You're an impetuous man, Mr. Clayton.
So you're Mallory.
Sit down, please. We'll have dinner.
Just a minute. Before we have anything else, we'll have an explanation, Mallory.
You're Holliday, aren't you?
That's right.
Fiction writer, aren't you?
What's that got to do with this routine?
Please, sit down. Miss Lansing, on my right, please. Mr. Waring, that chair. Mr. Clayton, on my left. Mr. Holliday, sit at the other end, facing me. Please, you want an explanation. I promise you'll get one after dinner. Or would you rather wait another night and another day?
I'll sit down.
Thank you, Miss Lansing.
All right.
Yes, the explanation had better be good.
Oh, it will be, Mr. Clayton. And Mr. Holliday.
Yes?
I'll wager you've never written anything to match it.
Well, we sat down. Mr. Mallory enjoyed his dinner. We didn't. I watched him. He was a big man. His huge head was covered with a shock of iron gray hair that matched the mustache under his sharp, thin nose. And he was charming and cultured. In spite of the fantastic situation, we found ourselves listening to him at the dinners we sat in the salon.
The 18th dynasty was Egypt's greatest. Its pharaohs conquered and reconquered. Its art reached a beauty and subtlety never before or since reached. Ah, yes, great people. But maybe I'm boring you.
Not at all, Mr. Mallory.
You're very kind.
And now, Mallory, the explanation.
Of course, Mr. Waring.
Well, Mallory?
I'm choosing my words carefully, Mr. Clayton.
They'd better be good.
They will be. Miss Lansing, gentlemen, I investigated each of you before inviting you aboard my yacht. Mr. Waring?
What?
You advertised in the paper for a job, preferably in a foreign country, but you have no family. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. You answered my ad.
Correct. Miss Lansing?
Yes?
You advertised for a companion position. You, too, have no family.
No, I haven't.
Mr. Clayton, you ran an ad offering your services in any capacity. You're sort of a soldier of fortune.
If you want to call it that.
I shall. Lastly, Mr. Holliday, Box 13. Adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything.
Yes, that's my ad.
Now, does any one of you see a striking similarity? Oh, please, you must have.
You mean the prolonged absence of any one of us would go, well, would go unnoticed.
Exactly.
All right, you're clever, Mr. Mallory. We'll admit that. You've got us in a spot where you could do anything. Now, would you mind telling us why?
Mr. Holliday, you're a fiction writer. Have you ever written a story about a perfect crime?
Crime?
Don't be alarmed, Miss Lansing. Well, Holliday?
No, I've never written one.
But there have been perfect crimes, murders in which the killer has never been caught.
Yes, I suppose so.
Yet suppose someone knows the killer in such a murder. Then it would no longer be perfect.
What are you driving at?
Just this. One of the four of you is a murderer.
What?
A murderer?
I use the word murderer in the sense that it can be either masculine or feminine.
You know that?
I do. One of you here is a killer. 12 years ago, a man was killed, a friend of mine. The killer was never caught. I worked on it. I now have proof who that person is.
Why didn't you go to the police?
10 years ago, I would have. But now I'm in a position to enjoy myself, to watch the murderer squirm and wriggle.
You're insane.
What's to prevent us from
jumping on me? My crew is well paid, loyal. They've been with me for years. Money is an effective silencer.
You're a beast.
Perhaps.
Look, Mallory. The killer knows you've learned who he is.
Or she.
I'm not.
Perhaps not, Miss Lansing, but you were saying, Holliday.
The killer knows you know his or her identity. What's to prevent him from killing you?
My attorneys in the city have an envelope. In that envelope is the name of the person and all details. If I do not return within a certain time, that envelope will be opened.
What's the time limit?
Wouldn't you like to know, Mr. Waring?
Oh, just a minute.
I have a question, Holliday.
Yes, I don't think you've finished your explanation.
I haven't. Here it is. In 3 days, we will dock at Havana. If by that time the killer's identity is not known to the other three of you, I will release all four of you.
And the killer will go free?
Yes.
What if we do learn?
I'm sure the killer will do all in his or her power to prevent that.
How can we find that out?
I will give clues. You will have to recognize them.
I see. And if the killer realizes he's being trapped?
Then he or she may kill to prevent that knowledge from getting out. And, Miss Lansing, gentlemen, I shall not lift a finger to prevent it.
Do you think you can get away with this?
Why, of course he can't.
You're very wrong, gentlemen. No one can prove you came aboard this yacht. No one knows.
You'll stand by and see three people killed?
The cleverest will survive. Now, here's your first clue. Are you ready? The Roman god, Janus.
Janus? The Roman god?
Yes. And now, good night. And may the cleverest among you live to see Havana.
now, back to One of These Four, another Box 13 adventure starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. So, there we were, the four of us, and one of us a murderer, or so Mallory said. Was he lying? If he wasn't, then he'd cooked up a fantastic situation. After dinner that same night, I went to my cabin and sat down, trying to figure out what the Roman god Janus had to do with a killer when... Come in.
May I come in, Mr. Holliday?
Please do, Mr. Mallory. It's your yacht.
Mind if I sit down?
It is also your chair.
I like your sense of humor.
I like yours. It's just like an open grave.
Don't you think you could get a story out of this, Mr. Holliday?
What else will I get out of it, Mallory?
Do you believe my explanation?
I don't know.
Here, take this.
What?
Here,
what?
Take it. Take it. It's loaded, too.
Why the gun?
To protect yourself.
Against what? Or whom?
Against the murderer. It is loaded, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, and it's pointed right at you.
So I see. But strangely enough, I'm not worried.
What's to prevent me from forcing you to order the shot back to land?
Your sense of adventure, your own willingness to see this through, your desire for a good story.
Aren't you placing too high a value on your ability to judge people?
I made no mistake in you, Holliday. That's why I gave you the gun.
You mean you're actually going through with this incredible thing?
Yes. One of the other three is the killer. Miss Lansing, Mr. Waring, or Mr. Clayton.
Suppose none of us learns who the killer is.
I intend to keep my yacht on the high seas until you do.
But you said we'd be in the van in 3 days.
We don't have to be.
You had better be.
Holliday, I have my own reasons for this incredible thing. I've come to you because I've watched you, listened to you. Of the four, you are the one who seems the most resourceful. You alone acted with calm and sense at dinner.
Thank you, Mr. Mallory.
Not at all, Mr. Holliday. Now I'll leave you alone. And, Mr. Holliday, the cabin doors are no longer locked. They cannot be locked because the keys are gone. Good night.
And that was that. Mallory's statement that the cabin doors were no longer locked meant that the killer, if there was one, could go and come freely. And whoever it was would be watching, waiting. Oh, Mallory was clever. He was safe because of that envelope with his attorneys. And the rest of us? Well, we'd have to do something to protect ourselves. It was midnight when I got up from the bed. I hadn't undressed. I'd kept my eyes on the door. Then I thought again about Janus. Janus, the Roman god. What kind of a clue was that? Well, I decided to find out. There were books in the main salon. Maybe I could learn something from them. I stepped into the passageway. It was dark. Not a light showing. I groped my way along the passage toward the main salon. I opened the door. Who's that?
Mr. Holliday, is that you?
Yes, what are you doing in here?
Oh, I was afraid. I was in my cabin. I was afraid. I had to get out. It was so small, I felt as though I'd smother.
But why did you come in here?
I don't know.
Why didn't you turn on the lights?
Well, I tried to. I couldn't find the switch.
Did you see anyone else?
No. No one.
You'd better get back to your cabin.
No, I can't. I won't go back there. Mr. Mallory said the door couldn't be locked.
Oh.
Mr. Holliday, I didn't kill anybody. I'm innocent. Please. Please get me off this yacht.
In the middle of an ocean?
We can get a boat. We got to.
You wouldn't have a chance in the world.
Oh, but we'll all be killed.
Come on, come on. I'd better get you back to your cabin. Come on.
Oh, no. I won't go. I won't go.
Now, don't get hysterical. That won't help.
Oh, please. Please help.
What makes you think I can?
You? You mean you won't help?
I didn't say that. I...
Oh, you're the murderer. You're the one. Oh!
Be quiet.
That's good advice, Miss Lansing. Be quiet.
Mallory.
The lights will go out in a moment.
Turn them on now.
I can't. The main switch is off. I had it turned off because... Ah, there we are.
Why turn off the main switch, Mallory?
Added protection and...
What's the matter? Who's that screaming?
Ah, Mr. Waring. Did Mr. Clayton come with you?
Yes. Yes, I'm here. What happened?
Well, it seems that Mr. Holliday and Miss Lansing...
Holliday?
What about it, Waring?
What were you doing in here?
Yes. What were you doing in here?
Perhaps he couldn't sleep.
Just a moment. I walked to the bookshelves, hunted for a moment while they all watched.
It's still there, Mr. Holliday.
What's still there?
A book of mythology.
Mythology? What are you talking about?
Mr. Mallory gave the Roman god Janus as a clue. Now, Janus would appear in a book of mythology. Here it is.
You're very clever, Mr. Holliday. Would you mind looking in the index for Janus, J-A-N-U-S?
I can spell. There you are. Page 86.
Turn to it.
There's no page 86.
That's right.
Someone tore it out of here.
Exactly. And that's the only book of mythology on board. It's obvious the killer took it out to prevent the others from finding the clue.
In other words, the killer knew that reading that page would give him away.
Yes, provided the reader was sufficiently acute. But the killer forgot one thing.
Yes, forgot what?
He or she is the biggest clue of all.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, Mr. Waring, there's something about him or her that gives away the show and ties in with Janus.
What is it, Mother?
Find that out and you'll have the person, Mr. Clayton. Look at one another and remember what I said. Good night.
Which one of us took that page from the book?
He did. Mallory did, deliberately. So he could go on with this preposterous game.
I wonder.
But there was someone in here when I came in.
You don't know who it was?
No. I left the door open when I came in. I couldn't find the light switch. I think someone slipped out when I came in.
And you, Holliday? You were here?
Yes. Yes, I was. What of it?
What do you think?
What were you going to do here, Holliday?
I came here to...
Let's turn off the lights again.
I don't think that anyone should move.
We'd better get back to our cabins. I don't like being in the dark with a killer. The next morning on deck, I saw Waring standing at the aft rail. I stopped because he looked around as though seeing if anyone were near. Then he raised his arm and threw something into the sea. I wondered what it might be. Then he turned quickly and came toward me.
Hello, Holliday.
Hello, Waring.
Nice day, isn't it?
I hadn't noticed.
Has anything happened?
I don't know, has it?
What's the matter with you?
What did you throw overboard, Waring?
Throw overboard? Me? Nothing.
Look, Waring, we're all in this together. We've got to cooperate.
One of us is a killer. I won't cooperate with anyone. Now, let me get past.
All right. All right, go ahead. He left me standing there. I walked toward my cabin down the passageway and opened the door. Clayton.
Well, Holliday. Well, I thought you were on deck.
Well, I'm not. What are you doing in here?
Well, I wanted to see you.
You can't find me in that drawer.
Well, it was open when I came in.
It was not?
All right, it wasn't. So what?
That's my question. What were you looking for?
The missing page from that book.
Stop lying.
Where did you get that gun? What are you going to do now? Please, don't.
Get out of here. Go on, get out.
I'm going to tell Mallory that you have a gun.
Sat down. Things were moving fast. I thought about Catherine Lansing. She'd been in the salon. I thought about Waring, who had thrown something overboard. And what he'd thrown hadn't been paper, so it wasn't the page from the book. And I thought about Clayton searching my cabin. Which of the three was the killer? By now, I believed Mallory's story. Then I remembered something about Janus. And it tied in with what Mallory had said. Tied in with the killer and something I'd seen. I left my cabin and hurried down the passage. I was almost to the end when...
Feeling better, sir?
Who hit me?
We don't know, Holliday.
Well, whoever hit me took the gun you gave me, Mallory.
You, Mallory? You gave him the gun?
What was the idea?
Well, where is it now?
That's what I'd like to know.
Obviously, Mr. Holliday, the killer has it.
That's right.
This is going to be an interesting lunch. You may serve, William.
Very good, sir.
Mallory, I know who has that gun.
Of course you do, Mr. Holliday.
Who is it?
Miss Lansing? When were you born? What month?
Month?
Go ahead, Holliday. Go on.
Well, Miss Lansing?
Well, July. Why?
Is that right, Mallory?
That's right.
Clayton?
What is this?
Answer the same question.
December.
He's telling the truth, Holliday.
And Waring? When were you born?
September.
Is that right, Holliday?
No, I don't think so. Waring, you were born in January, the month named after the Roman god Janus.
Be careful, Holliday.
What you threw overboard was a ring. A ring with a dark red stone. Your birthstone. A garnet.
That's perfectly true, Holliday.
Keep your hands on the table, all of you. And thank you for this gun, Mr. Holliday.
You are not welcome.
What do you intend to do, Waring? Kill all of us?
I'm not that stupid.
You killed my brother.
Yes, but I'm not going to Havana or anyplace else on this yacht. Now stay where you are. I'll shoot the first person who gets up from that table. And I'll shoot to kill.
Clayton, William.
No, sit still. Let him go.
Let him go?
Yes, the crew has instructions to let anyone go. They won't see him take the lifeboat. They'll let him go.
But he'll get away.
I don't think so. He'll be picked up. You see, Miss Lansing, we haven't been many miles from shore. Now, shall we go on with our lunch? Miss Lansing, Mr. Clayton, you've been put to a lot of trouble. I hope these checks will make you feel happier. I think they will. Mr. Holliday, you got a story, I hope.
Oh, yes, I did.
You see, Mr. Holliday, I had to do it this way. I had no proof that Waring was the murderer. I spent 10 years getting evidence, but no proof. I had a hope that he would break, put him under tension.
But that envelope with your attorneys?
Mr. Holliday, there was no envelope.
They picked up that Waring, huh?
Yes. Mallory radioed the police.
If he'd kept quiet, no one would have known.
Yes, I know. But Mr. Mallory is a very clever man.
So are you.
Well, thank you, Susie.
Oh, say, what about that ticket on the liner?
Oh, I never thought about that. Hey, Susie, maybe I can still use it. Here it is.
Uh-oh, Mr. Holliday.
Huh? What's the matter?
Look, the date. The boat sailed yesterday.
Oh, fine. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with this week's original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. Part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. Box 13 is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed today's stories. You can find more from Theater Royal, Box 13, past episodes of this podcast, and all of the others at relicradio.com. You'll also find our Shoutcast stream there and a donate button if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows. I can't do it without your support. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. Be back Wednesday with Case Closed and next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.